Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
So I believe the next thing to do would be to recognize the city attorney.
The council asked Gray Robinson and more particularly myself to review the pending litigation with Mayor Lindsay to advise the council on a plan to exit the litigation with the mayor. And this is the lawsuit. I've called it the public records lawsuit. I did what the council asked me to do. I reviewed the pleadings, I reviewed documents, I spoke with the mayor's legal counsel, and did some legal research to determine how we could accomplish or how I could direct the council to accomplish what I understand the council has directed me to do.
So when we last left our heroes at the city of Milton, we were in the final stages of extricating the city from a lawsuit that was filed by the former city council with the support of the former city attorney, Alex Andrade, against Mayor Heather Lindsay for her abject refusal to produce public records that had been requested by the city council with the help of Alex Andrade over the Scott Collins debacle of 2023, I think. Anyway, and remember that, you know, she had denied there were such records. Then when records came to light because of a public records filing from somebody else, Tom Powers, who subsequently got elected to city council, it became clear that there were obviously public records out there that had not been produced. And so they took it to a lawsuit. Alex Andrade tried many times to try to get her to produce the records outside of having to do a lawsuit. And then they actually did file a lawsuit. She was losing. The judge had reviewed maybe 100,000 texts, what they're describing as 3,300 documents, each document containing many, 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 many texts on it. And the judge had said, you must produce these records by date. She had refused. He said again, you must produce by date. She had refused. And then there was an election, you know, in the midst of all this. And in the election, the new city council, which was aligned with Heather Lindsay, took over control. And with a 6-2 or 7-1 majority, depending on how you count it and who shows up to which meeting. And they had decided to end the lawsuit. Alex Andrade's law firm had said, we cannot honor this request because the judge has already said that you owe these records. And we cannot, in good ethics as lawyers, decline to pursue the records that the judge says we are entitled to when the law says we are entitled to them. You're asking us to do something that is unethical or maybe even illegal. We are out as your lawyers. But you can't just leave. You've got to be allowed by the judge to leave. So finally that has happened, and now the new law firm is in there. John Adams is the lawyer representing them. Not that John Adams, a different John Adams. You know. Anyway, and so the new Gray Robinson is the new law firm, and he is representing them. And they said, well, can you review these documents? And he said, yeah, you know, it's going to cost a couple $1,000 for me to review these documents. I'll tell you where we stand. I know you want to get out of this lawsuit. By the way, they were not just on the verge of winning, but I think any reasonable analyst would think they were on the verge of winning, and the mayor would have to pay not only her own law fees, but also the fees that have been racked up for Alex Andrade in having to do all of this nonsense, which, again, was because she refused to turn over her public documents. Okay. And so he did. And he's looked it over. And, you know, he says, look, the mayor has turned over documents. The judge has reviewed them. There were 3,300 documents, about 100,000 texts. The judge has done a thorough analysis. He says that there are clearly a lot of those that are public records, somewhere in the vicinity of 300. The mayor has objected and said that about 300 are not public records. And then there's a handful of records that are maybe or maybe not public records. And so essentially the lawyer for the city, the new lawyer for the city, John Adams, who has been tasked with the job of dropping the lawsuit and getting them out of all of this. I mean, anybody would say it's a mess. The question is, what's the right solution? Who caused it? But okay, here's what he says.
But it's my understanding that the documents which the court identified to be public records but for which there were no objections from the mayor. Our questions from the court have now been turned over to the city clerk. We are working, Gray Robinson, working with the city clerk to make sure that nothing's fallen to cracks on those documents and all the documents that required to be turned over were, and we believe that to be the case. And if there is something that wasn't, we firmly believe the mayor's counsel will help us get that.
Wait, what? She's turned them over? The bulk of the records that were in dispute that she denied existed, that then she was told were public records, she's turned them over to the clerk? Andrew McKay fills out public records request. Reminder, hey, I'd like these. And it's true. They were in the possession of the clerk, and I have read them. And I will tell you that for the most part, super boring. For the most part, there's a couple of lightly juicy things in there. Nothing particularly revelatory. And of course, if I've read them and they've been finally turned over, other than the 300 she objects to, documents, not text. Text may be as many as 5,000 or 10,000. We don't really know. Anyway, if I've read them and there's nothing much in them, the natural question you might have is, well, if there's nothing much in them, then why was she fighting so hard to keep from turning them over? Well, obviously not these records. Obviously, nobody spends tens of thousands of dollars to prevent the release of blah. That doesn't matter. Not really. So the question then is, well, what's in the other records that aren't being released? Well, your guess is as good as mine, but it must be worth thousands and thousands of dollars to Mayor Lindsay to not release those documents, which makes you really wonder, good Lord, what's in them? Right? Because if it was nothing, if it was all a giant nothing burger, you're just like, oh, well, here. Right? Okay, so we don't know because we haven't seen. Only the judge has seen, so the lawyer says.
There are really two questions for the council to continue to move, to consider, rather, to move forward. One is, does the council remain in the litigation, continue to spend the taxpayers' dollars on legal fees to pursue the 300 or some odd documents that the mayor's objected to? You have the almost 3,000, I believe, that were not objected to.
Yeah, and we already know that the city council does not care because they are aligned with her and they think this is all a big mistake to begin with, and maybe they think it was persecution of her or something, whatever, but they're definitely wanting to answer that question. And the no, we don't want to consider litigate. They've already voted on that. Sue?
And if the city wishes to resolve the litigation, which is the indication from the votes that in the direction I was given, if the city decides to resolve the litigation, does the city forego any right it might have to seek attorney's fees from the mayor? And of course, the mayor would be required to make the same concession.
Right. Are you going to not only end this case, but are you going to give up your right to seek compensation from the mayor for fighting through the law to turn over her public records and costing the city tens of thousands of dollars? I mean, somewhere in the vicinity of maybe $30,000, best guess, that would have been paid to Alex Andrade's law firm because she forced this long legal battle in order to refuse to produce these public records. Do you give all of that up? Which, of course, is their right, as he pointed out. Clients make choices all the time about which lawsuits to pursue, which lawsuits to abandon. What's super weird about this case is, of course, they are deciding to abandon a lawsuit they are winning and to abandon it without getting the results of winning both the rest of the public records and also the compensation, which was very likely that she would have had to pay because the judge has consistently said do, and she has consistently said no. Second wrinkle in all of this is, remember West Hill and Moreland, they basically quit when they were told to drop the case because they said we can't legally do this. Part of the analysis by John Adams was going to be, can he legally do what they're asking him to do? And you say, well, what is it that stopped Alex Andrade from being willing to do it and allowed him? Well, the difference is she turned over a bulk of the records. She complied. Now, she could have done that before, right? She could have done that before, in which case, maybe, I mean, we probably still wouldn't have Alex as the city attorney. But, you know, the thing that made it so he couldn't do what they were asking him to do, she changed her mind on. And now the new lawyer says, you know, I can legally pursue this case because the disputed ones are disputed. The agreed upon ones are agreed upon. And we've got those in our possession. All right. So what would be the outcome now? Well, three or four, depending how you count them, elements of the proposal that the lawyer is recommending that they are going to move forward on.
You would authorize the city attorney to work with the mayor's legal counsel to prepare and file a joint motion asking the San Lorenzo County Circuit Court to enter an order in the circuit court proceeding style, the City of Milton versus Heather Lindsay case number 24-269, and that order would award the following relief. One, that order would sustain the mayor's objections to the approximate 315 documents, which the circuit court determined to be public records, but to which the mayor objected or the court had questions. And to the extent necessary, have the court reconsider its prior ruling on January 31, 2025, any subsequent order to sustain the mayor's objections.
All right, so element one is we're going to end the litigation. We're going to stipulate that the mayor was correct to object, and we're going to ask the court to reconsider their still in existence decision that she does owe these records, right? The 300 that she has refused to produce, the court has said you have to, and she still has not. You might even say she currently stands in contempt of court for her refusal to produce those records. You're allowed to appeal, but the judge gave her not one but two different deadlines to meet, and she refused to meet both of those. So he's saying you could drop and you could admit that she's right about that. Part two.
Number two, you would ask the court to enter a final order confirming the mayor has produced the remaining documents in the court's January 31, 2025 order, identified as public records, to which there were no objections or questions from the mayor to the court.
Again, you could accept what she's already given, and you could abandon your claim on the remaining 300 documents with, again, 5,000 to 10,000, I'm just doing math guesses here, texts in them that the judge has said are public records, that she has said are not public records, that she has spent, I'm guessing again, a couple $10,000 preventing everybody from seeing because there must clearly be something in there that she really badly doesn't want everybody to see. And then part three.
You'd ask the court to order that the mayor and the city each bear their own attorney's fees and costs such that there will be no taxation of attorney's fees and costs for or against the mayor of the city. And you would ask the court to dismiss the litigation with prejudice, which means it's over. It can't be refiled.
Now, when he says it can't be refiled, it'd mean that the city can't be refiled. And that, which I still think is a hilarious term. I just had never heard of dismissing as a litigant on, you know, the seeking side. We're going to dismiss with prejudice. And then, of course, the humor that ensues from all the things you could do. And when you mean it really seriously, I could do with prejudice. But, okay, so fine. So Larry McKee, a new city councilman, who has kind of been on somewhat both sides of this. Not sure what to make of all that, but he reads all the things the lawyer wrote for him to read, and then Mike Cusack and Marilyn Farrow second it, and then one person on the council disagrees. The lone holdout from the old council who was unopposed in the election, Casey Powell.
I personally am not in favor of not collecting the documents that the judge already ruled was public record. I understand the actions of the council doesn't support that of my fellow council members, but I think the ones that have already been ruled on that are public records, I think those should be produced as well, not just the ones that were not objected to. I know there was quite a few that there was questions on. I'm fine with those being left alone, but the ones that the judge said are public records, I think should be turned over to the city clerk. That's my opinion.
One voice of reason. One, in my opinion, okay, my opinion, one voice of reason, Casey Powell says, this is ridiculous. I can't believe we're abandoning this when we were on, you know, it's like stopping playing when you're, you know, you're up five and there's a minute to go and then all of a sudden you're just going to let the other side shoot. It didn't actually happen last night, but, you know, it'd be like metaphorically, that's kind of where we're at. Okay, so what did they decide to do? Well, they decided to vote, and it as should not be all that surprising.
We have a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. You're ready to vote. The motion has passed 6-1 with a nay vote. The nay vote by Councilman Powell.
So the mayor slash defendant presiding over the special called meeting to talk about this issue, about the lawsuit against her by the former city council, and so by the city, essentially, and she announces the vote 5-1 that you all are dropping the lawsuit against me. You're going to stipulate that I was right not to produce the public records that the judge has said that I must produce. And you're going to not seek any legal fees from me. And I guess I'm not going to seek any legal fees from you. And we're just going to all call it even. And we can go on our merry way with nobody knowing any the better what's in these public records if the judge allows it. Because the judge does not have to allow it. But that's where we stand. You say, Andrew, was there anything surprising in the text? I told you there was not anything particularly surprising. One thing is there was a absolute confirmation in the messages, which we knew before, but still is true, that Alex Andrade specifically tried last May to get the mayor to give the records before filing the lawsuit. Please, please don't make us go to court against you. A court order should not be necessary to enforce good conduct and accountability on your part. Assuming you do not plan on voluntarily producing the public records as requested, can you please confirm you'll accept service via email to avoid incurring the cost of a process server? So he did try many times to try to get her to give these records without having to actually go to the extent of filing the lawsuit against her. That would have saved the city money. It would have saved her money. That would have actually done her legal obligation of providing the records and so forth. And there's all a bunch. There's a lot of stuff. And like I said, I read through it. The only other one that's kind of halfway interesting, and it we'd already known, but it's fascinating to just see it. Oh, God, I don't have time to explain this right now. We'll take a break. I'll come back. I'll explain it. John Pickens doesn't even have traffic on the fives. It's just, you know, time to take a quick break. I'm Andrew McKay.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention, which is why when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love, guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tune in today at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as Regeneration Station will be here discussing how they help relieve individuals with severe pain with their latest in scalar and biophotonic energy room, which can allow cell regeneration, improve immune function, detoxify the body, elevate moods, and assist in balancing right and left hemispheres of the brain to increase energy levels. It's the Regeneration Station today on the Pensacola Expert Panel
on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
Really, Dr. McCoy, you must learn to govern your passions. They will be your undoing.
I did mention a moment ago that there was mildly juicy, only because it's the first time I had seen it, but I had known of its existence. Remember back when they were in the process of, well, first they were trying to fire, the first time around, they were trying to fire Alex Andrade, and that didn't work out. And then, because the city clerk had done some things that looked kind of, you know, well, the city council decided to fire the city clerk. And then the city clerk had gotten a lawyer to try to get compensation for being fired prematurely and to get money from the city. Alex Andrade had written a note to Marilyn Farrow, one of the allies of both the city clerk at the time, although she had been fired, and also the mayor, and told her, you know, kind of some legal advice on the meeting they were going to have that night about whether to pay the fees to the clerk. He sent her this email that was specifically listed as privileged communication protected by the laws of Florida, because he's the lawyer for the city and she's a city councilman. So she prints out that email, takes a photo of it with her phone, then from her personal email, emails it to the clerk on her public email. The clerk, who's not supposed to have this information because it came from the city attorney, about her issue when she was no longer the clerk. And then the clerk sends it to the mayor on her private email. I'm looking at a picture. I mean, this is like third grade spycraft. You print out the email, not because you don't want to forward it, right? You print it out and you send it to your buddy, and then your buddy sends it to the mayor in order to better inform you and them about what's going to happen at this meeting tonight where you're supposed to be representing the city against the former employee. Yeah, so I knew it about this already. But it's just kind of weird to see it in a picture of somebody's text where they took a photo of an email they just printed out in order to work around the system of creating a public record, which they still did. And also in violation of your duty as a city council person to represent the city. Okay, all right. There's a meeting tonight if you care to show up and talk, if you're frustrated. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. President Trump says he will raise tariffs on China by another 50%, and as if the country doesn't get rid of the retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. In a post on Truth Social, Trump set today as a deadline for China to undo their 34% duties that were put in place to the reciprocal tariffs announced last week by the White House. And the National Park Service says changes made to a website dedicated to the Underground Railroad have now been reversed. The page featured a prominent photo of Harriet Tubman for many years. That photo was recently removed. The page was also rewritten in places to remove references to slavery and focus on how blacks and whites worked together before the Civil War.
All right, very good. One thing I said wrong, it was to Dawn Molinaro's private email, not to Republic email, because she didn't have one at that point because she'd been fired already.
News. I'm Chris Foster.
I have great respect for China, but they can't do this.
China's government's responding to President Trump threatening even higher tariffs on Chinese imports over retaliatory tariffs on American products there.
China will fight to the end, according to the country's commerce ministry, warning that if the U.S. imposes even more tariffs on Chinese goods, Beijing has countermeasures up its sleeve. It's also described as groundless, President Trump's claim that his tariffs are reciprocal. Typical unilateral bullying is how the Chinese see things.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Stock markets are higher overseas. Soar stock futures here ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street. Florida rallies to beat Houston 65-63, winning the NCAA men's college basketball title.
The Cougars had the ball in the final seconds with a chance to win, but Houston was unable to get a shot on the basket. Gator star Walter Clayton Jr. scored 11 points, all of which came in the second half.
It's Fox's Joe Morgan. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 48 degrees in Pensacola. Governor Ron DeSantis announced Florida achieved a historic tourism milestone, capturing a record 15.5% of the domestic vacation market last year. That's an increase from 2023 and marks the sixth time Florida's set a tourism record since he's been governor. DeSantis praised Florida as the world's favorite place to visit, attributing the success to policies prioritizing freedom, public safety, and common sense. Niceville High School has new head coach for their football team. The school says Richard Morgan is taking over their coaching duties next season. He was formerly the head coach for Marietta High School in Georgia. Has an impressive record, too, 224 wins and three state championships under his belt, the last one in 2019. Morgan replaces former head coach Grant Thompson, who resigned in March. Thompson was the school's coach for 6 years. He led them to two state semifinal appearances. Felix's Restaurant and Oyster Bar, which replaced Hemingway's Island Grill on Pensacola Beach about 4 years ago, closed last month. The Santa Rosa Island Authority has now approved Pensacola Beach Holdings to sublease to a new tenant, Bounce Beach Pensacola. That'll be managed by a hospitality group out of New York, which recently registered a new LLC here in Florida. Now, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, in partnership with Wildlife Forever, announcing the winners of Florida's State Fish Art Contest for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Now, this contest encourages creativity and also fosters some future anglers and conservationists. Winners in each category from four grade brackets advance to the national competition, where they'll compete for prizes like Best of Show. And if you want to see that winning artwork, check out the FWC website, myfwc.com/fishart. And you can see the winning artwork. And congratulations, of course, to this year's winners. A pilot program at Century Correctional Institution helps inmates secure jobs when they get released. Last week, the Florida Department of Corrections held an employment showcase at CCI to connect employers with the program. Inmates build homes for sale and receive certifications in HVAC, plumbing, and carpentry, according to FDC Region 1 Coordinator Alicia Lee Warren. Well, Escambia County says a portion of County Road 97A, Pine Forest Road, collapsed yesterday due to all those flooding issues.
We had a road washout. where due to the excess water that accumulated on the roadways, it got underneath the roadway, which washed out the dirt, which then caused the road to then fall down in place of where that dirt was. So it's not a sinkhole necessarily, but it is what is considered a road washout. That's what's taking place, and the roadway is currently closed.
And that was Davis Wood from Escambia County yesterday discussing that issue there on Pine Forest Road. He said the workaround would be Highway 97 and Walnut Hill North, and then you could get back on Pine Forest using Pelt Road. It is 534, News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 46 degrees in Pensacola, 47 in Gulf Breeze, 46 in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Banakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Banakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Banakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Banakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Banakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Banakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
It's spring at Anderson Subaru, the perfect time to refresh your ride. With 3.9% for 63 months on 2025 Subaru Outback models, or get 3.9% for 48 months on 2025 Forester models and 2025 Crosstrek models. At Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor. We're just country boys and girls getting down on the farm. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Two for Walter Clayton Jr. 6-point game, 7 seconds left. Pettiford pulls up, misses on a three ball.
Look at the save.
Clayton saves, and it's over. A return to national prominence for the Gators. Florida will play for the national title.
Now, the only reason I'm sharing that ahead of talking with Ryan Jenkins about what's going on in Jay is I know he is, like me, an even bigger War Eagle Auburn fan, and if we're going to have misery, we're going to have it together, Ryan. Welcome back, sir.
Yeah, it was good until it wasn't.
How much is being an Auburn fan like being a farmer?
There's a lot of similarities, I can tell you.
Oh, man. We won't go into
so
it, but
out of your control.
What's that?
I said so much is out of your control.
Yeah, my God. Anyway, we won't need to talk about whether that was a charge or not a charge. Anyway, let's just move on. I will pull for the Gators because it's SEC, and, you know, that's fine, but it was disappointing. Anyway, what's going on the farm right
now?
What's that?
I said it was fun to watch. It's been a great year.
It was fun to watch. It was painful to lose, but it was a good game, and I always take a good game. What's going on your farm right now? What have you been doing this month?
Well, we still are busy, you know, getting ready for the year. We've been doing a lot of equipment maintenance and repairing stuff and just getting all of our pieces ready for action and still spreading lime. And we're terminating our cover crops and really just getting ready to plant them. A little bit behind. I wish I had my corn planted, but now that it rained, you know, 5 or 6 inches last night, I'm kind of glad I didn't pull the trigger on that last week. But all in all, it's going good. We've just been really busy doing, you know, the extra stuff that I don't know if people know. You know, I think some people think all we do is drive a tractor and go from one end of the field to the other. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that we do to promote agriculture and to keep agriculture headed in the right direction. We've spent a lot of time in the last month. We've had several different events we've been part of, and we've hosted most of them ourselves. So just a lot going on there.
All right, so you got a lot of events going on. I know you have people in and come talk about all kinds of things, right?
That's right. I mean, some of the things we've done, we have Farm Bureau Day in Tallahassee, so that's where all Farm Bureau members from throughout the state, you know, we have a day that we go there and really inundate the lawmakers there with agriculture and talk about different issues and meet with different ones and really try to promote agriculture, but also work on the problems that we're facing and trying to find good solutions to those problems and working with those guys. And then, you know, for the stuff we've had at the barn, I feel like this election season is just going on forever and ever and ever. But anyway, you know, we just finally had our election for House District 3. We had several of those candidates at the barn one day to meet with all the different farmers and go over issues that we're facing. And then two of my favorite things are, I know you've been to one or two of these yourself. I can't remember which ones you've been to, but
I went to First Responders Day, I know, and I think I went to the Extrication Day, too, where you were kind of featuring, you know, teaching people how to think about that kind of stuff. Maybe it was the same day, but anyway.
Yep. Same day, that was it. So we had our annual Jenkins Farms Farm Safety Day. We had about 100 first responders there and went through all different types of issues that they could run into. And, you know, the goal is just to expose them. A lot of them have never been around the farm. Expose them to some of the types of equipment that we use, the size of the equipment we use, special considerations they would need for a safe rescue on a farm. Types of injuries they might see. You know, it's a really good day, and you know, we always get a lot of good feedback from that one, and it's just something that's very important to me for many reasons. But another thing that we do is we have FFA Ag Career Day at the barn, where we have different FFA chapters from the area come. This year we had about 135 students or so there, and I think we had 12 different presenters, and the goal there is just to show the kids, hey, you know, the morning after you wake up from high school graduation, you don't have to know exactly what you're going to do the rest of your life. And most of the presenters that tell their stories, you know, their path to where they ended up is very crooked. Most of them are nowhere near what they thought they were going to do when they were in high school. But we want to expose those guys to, hey, you know, not everybody can be the guy driving the tractor or owning the farm, but there are plenty, plenty, plenty of job or career opportunities out there that can still make them feel connected to the farm, to feel connected to their raising, their upbringing. So, you know, that's something that's been very, very successful as well and something we're proud of.
Ryan, you're going to tell me about a third event that you guys have hosted this month. And one of the things I love about your farm is not just that you do the farming, of course you do, but you use your farm as an opportunity for outreach, education, for encounter, for bringing, you know, leadership. Santa Rosa folks come in all the time. Like, you really think of your farm as a kind of a broader community political service in a sense, and I love that. That's how I got to know you.
That's exactly how we got to know each other, and that's I feel like that's important. I feel like so many people these days are disconnected from the farm. That's how we've kind of gotten a bad rap over the years, is people are further and further and further away from the farm, and they're getting fed worse and worse information. And so, you know, I'm just trying to connect the dots for people. That's really my goal. I want to see, hey, we're all on the same team. recurring to provide a service, and I try to remind people, hey, think about this: less than 2% of the population are feeding and clothing 100% of the population. So, you know, there's very few of us, but we need to remind people where their food and fiber come from.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of a segue into the final thing that we did. That was Saturday night, and it wasn't Jenkins Farms, but we were a part of it. Absolutely. It was the Jay Area Chamber of Commerce, their first annual farm to table dinner.
Oh, okay.
And that turned out to be super cool. You know, they came up with this idea a year ago, and it was to promote agriculture, promote the city, raise some money for the chamber, all this. They came up with the idea with let's serve a meal that's 100% grown right here in our area. And so they started doing it. They started then, you know, picking blueberries and storing those, picking peas, corn, you know, everything they needed for this entire event, you know, has been harvested over the past year. And then they hired a chef, a local well-known chef, to come in and cook, prepare the meal, sold tickets. We had, when they came up with the event, they said, we'll try to sell 200 tickets for $100 a piece. And believe it or not, there was about a 3 or 4 page waiting list for people wanting tickets.
Yeah, so, I believe it. I mean, it sounds like a really neat thing.
It turned out to be a huge success.
Ryan?
Hey, are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know. Yeah, no, it sounds like a really cool thing. Cool. Go ahead.
No, that was it. It just, you know, they exceeded all expectations, and I expect next year to be 400 people probably, the way it looked.
That's
great.
I mean,
everybody was so excited.
I love it. That sounds amazing. One of the questions that I had for you that I, you know, kind of been lingering on the back of my mind is, obviously, with Trump coming into office and border control and with various efforts to restrict immigration, the state has kind of done its own things. The perception that people have about agriculture is that agriculture is one of the primary reasons that we have illegal immigration, that you have a lot of illegal immigrants that work in the fields doing work that, you know, U.S. citizens will not do. Is that true in the state? Is that true here in Northwest Florida? Is it people who are from Mexico but are legally here, or Guatemala, or anywhere else? What happens both in the state and here locally when it comes to immigration?
Well, that is a big deal, and you hit on it. You cannot find, it's very difficult to find domestic help. You know, people that want to work in farming, it's hard to find. But I can say the few people that I do know in our local area, that use, you know, foreign workers for their deal, it is extremely regulated. Those people are treated, the regulations that they have to deal with, like housing and things that are provided for those guys, they're treated better than we are. It's unbelievable. It's almost hard to do the regulations that they have, that they're forced to deal with, and I don't know of anybody in our area that would even touch someone that's illegal. There's just too many things to lose for doing that. The ones that I know are straight up doing it right. It's a difficult process to get those workers here, but I can tell you this, the ones that I know that are using them, they are 100% on the up and up, and they are 100% treated like family. And they're treated better than some of their own family. So it's the ones that I know of are doing it right. I don't know of anyone. I'm sure somewhere in the country there's somebody that's using illegal immigrants, but the people locally, at least, that I can speak for, are, they have a hard time doing it because of all the regulations, but
yeah,
they do it and do it well and do it the right way.
Interesting. No, I mean, I didn't know what the answer was going to be. So that's fascinating. We always like to end with a farm fact or something like this. You have one for me this week or this month?
I do, but you probably already know it because you're pretty daggum smart yourself.
Oh, way to overshoot.
Anyway.
Let's see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You know, it's time to plant corn. it was time to plant corn. So I was trying to think of some neat corn fact. And, you know, probably most people already know this, and it's just a little tidbit. But when you look at a cob of corn, an ear of corn, next time you go eat corn on the cob, if you count the rows of kernels around it, they will always be an even number. So I think that's pretty fascinating. You'll never find a ear of corn that has an odd number of rows. And then something else, you know, when you see corn with silk on it, I don't know if people realize that each kernel has its own piece of silk, and that's actually the female part of the plant. So that's how it gets pollinated. When the pollen falls off the male part, which is the tassel, it has to hit each piece of that silk for that kernel to turn into a kernel of corn. So.
Now,
a lot going on in a corn plant.
As someone who lived most of my life in Illinois, as someone whose university at Illinois has a song about our experimental cornfield, the Moral Plots. No, you can't throw shade on the corn is the song. And has lived much of my life driving north and south across the cornfields. I didn't know either of those things. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, there you go. Now, next time you're sitting there eating corn on the cob, count them and they'll be eating, I promise.
I guarantee. I know what I'm going to do and what everybody else is going to be like. I'm going to find the one that proves them wrong. I'm going to get me a four-leaf clover. I'm going to get me an 11-row of corn ear. I'm going to prove him wrong.
Yeah, most of them average around 16 to 18 rows around.
All right, but they don't have 15 or 17. Okay, all right, I'll take it. Ryan Jenkins is our good friend. He's the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. Community outreach, political, and also, of course, he informs us every month what's going on the farm. Ryan, as always, thank you for the time, and thanks for feeding my kids and putting clothes on their back, man. I appreciate the work.
Thank you so much for having us and helping get the word out. Y'all have a great week.
People in 5:51 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. And hey, if you are turning 65, you're 64, turn 65, or you are retiring, or you have questions, just questions about Medicare, Medicaid, and you want to understand this a little bit better, give Ricky Stewart a call. This is her whole family does insurance, and she does just this one portion of helping people get converted over. It's really not that hard, not that difficult, but it can seem that way because it's different than what you've done your whole entire life, right? You've worked on private insurance your whole life, and you have questions. What supplement? What's Advantage? What about prescription drugs? Again, is Medicaid? Because most people never have to know the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. It's like a political issue for most people. And so if you don't know, you might wonder, well, how do those apply? Well, they may not, but that's something you can ask her. It's very simple. She's a sweetheart. You'll love talking to her. 341-2185 for Ricky Stewart Insurance.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Need an affordable medical clinic?
Go to a ProHealth location.
Need a walk-in or same-day appointment?
Go to a ProHealth location.
Need a $45 zero copay medical plan?
Go to ProHealthFL.com. ProHealth has always been known for being Pensacola's most trusted and affordable clinic and lab, but now ProHealth offers over 30 affordable ultrasounds too. You never need a doctor's order, and ProHealth allows you to pay with HSA or FSA funds for all their services. You can even schedule yourself at ProHealthFL.com. That's ProHealthFL.com.
Join Claimology Thursday at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology. He'll be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing storm claims, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm and inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what to do before the next storm arrives. That's Thursday at 9:30 with Claimology on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Look, I know we got these rules and everything, but I was thinking she did help us bust that bug. Maybe we didn't have to flashy thing her.
Okay, I have been trying to find a good copy online of the Korn song. Because people who are not from Illinois are not going to believe me that there actually is an experimental plot of Korn on the grounds of the University of Illinois. It's called The Moral Plots. And that there actually was a song by, there was an a cappella band that used to perform called The Other Guys. I think this is maybe an okay spot in the song. Let's see if we can get this here. They're doing a, it's a comedy thing. Dang it. I'll have to come back to it. It's just funny. I wanted you to hear it, to believe me that there really is a song where we sing. They sing, no, you can't throw shade on the corn. It'll die as sure as you're born. No, sir, we don't mess around. Our library is underground because you can't throw shade on the corn. They built the library underground so that the moral plots wouldn't get shade from the building.
Have y'all had too much snow up there? I mean, I'm just asking.
David, wait, is it
not enough sunshine?
No, it's, but they were building a library right next to the moral plots, and so they built the library underground so there wouldn't be shade on the corn, the experimental corn plot that's been there for like 100 years.
Something corn-related that I've never heard about. This is unbelievable.
I'm trying to fight back. Like, you know, Ryan Jenkins is bringing his even rows of corn and all, and the silk is the unpollinated female or whatever. And I'm trying to tell you about the, you know, the non-shaded corn on the grounds of the University of Illinois Undergraduate Library. Ripping radio. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
Well, Florida is the national men's college basketball champion. They came back from a 12-point deficit to beat Houston in the national championship game from San Antonio, the team's first title since winning back-to-back championships in 2006 and 2007.
Did you watch?
I did not.
Did you watch, John?
Yes.
Oh, my God. This was a fun game. The first half was furious. And they were down three at the half. They came back from being down more than that. They were down three at the half. And then Houston went up 12 fast in the second half. I'm like, oh, okay.
Here we go.
Florida's wilting. And then they just chipped and chipped and chipped. And about, 7 minutes in, they were tied again. And, like, the final sequence involved Houston down two, not able to get off a shot, and one of their players looking like a dummy standing in front of a bouncing basketball that he can't touch because he's the last one to touch it. It would have been a double dribble. And then they went, and Florida wins. I mean, it was wild. So congratulations. Go Gators. Anyway, sorry, David. Go ahead, sir.
That's all right. President Trump says he'll be raising tariffs on China by another 50% if they don't get rid of retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. He posted on Truth Social. He said today is the deadline for them to undo their 34% duties. And a group of teenagers, Andrew, are accused of attacking an Easter bunny at a mall in Naples. The bunny was...
What did the bunny do?
Well,
you know the bunny did something.
The bunny did nothing. The bunny was on his way to break.
The bunny was fishing quietly in his boat under the bridge when the guy from last night came to molest him.
The Coastland Center Mall in Naples. The bunny was not hurt. Two 13-year-olds have been arrested for battery.
What did they do to the bunny?
They assaulted the bunny.
It, like, fists? Baseball bats?
Apparently.
They threw rags at him? What happened?
Well,
they pushed him into a patch of candy?
I don't have the gritty details, but we'll get him.
Right. But
we'll
they didn't board his boat in any case?
No.
Okay. All right. What a story.
His boat is safe.
His boat is safe.